What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me, about to get them, all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It was an all-around good game for UC Soros and the Nashville Predators. A big 2-0 win last night against the Dallas Stars to put them temporarily back in the playoff spot, and they're now back out with Minnesota winning last night. But they're still right there. They're hanging around, and this is, as we said earlier, Joe, I think going to come down to the end. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, I didn't think Soros was tested a ton last night, but as we heard there in the highlight package coming back into this segment, there was a gigantic chance early on from Jamie Benn where he was able to make the save, stick with it. And really, every time he got tested last night, I thought he looked good. And, you know, we've kind of been waiting and waiting to see, okay, can the goaltending and can UC Soros specifically, can he continue to kind of track in the right direction? He looked real, real good last night against Dallas.
Is there any doubt in your mind he's in net Saturday at Dallas?
Oh, I would almost guarantee it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to be, right?
I mean, it's basically Pekka-Rinne is back-to-back guy now.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, probably.
And I know there are still a few of those left.
There's still several of those left. I think three or four are left. So, but,
yeah, I mean, you know, you're riding UC Soros. Like you said, he wasn't under siege last night. Credit to the Predators. I think they played exactly like John Hines wants them to play in the defensive zone. But when he had to step up, he did. And he just looked in control out there. You know, he looked confident. I know that's funny. You know, you're sitting up in the press box. You're that far away. And how could you possibly tell, you know, a player or a goaltender looks confident? But we've talked about Pekka-Rinne. I swear I can tell by his body movements early in a game. It's usually like pretty good accuracy on, okay, this might be a rough night, or okay, he looks like he's got it tonight. Not quite as easy with Soros.
It's a little different, yeah.
And maybe it's just because there's just less arm and leg to look at.
I don't know.
Last
night, the shortest goaltending matchup in the league so far this year.
That's some amazing trivia.
Under 6 feet.
Yeah, so Vingan said, you know, I sit next to Vingan up there, this is the only matchup of sub-6-foot goalies all year?
The whole year.
That's weird, isn't
it?
I mean, I understand a lot of goalies are tall, but there's some guys sub-6 foot.
Yeah.
There's some guys who are lying about their height, too, if that's true.
Oh, yeah. Like right?
Somebody's
lying out
there.
There's a couple guys listed at like 6'2 around the league that I'm 5'11. Like, I'm taller than, and I'm 6'1. So you're at least 6 foot. And this happens in every professional sport. Like, you know, Rocco Grimaldi is listed at like 5'6 or whatever he is. He might be like 5'4. Like, he's a pretty short guy.
Right.
Arvidsson, I think, is listed at 5'8". Do we believe Victor Arvidsson's 5'8"? Maybe. It's pretty close.
Yeah. Have you guys ever played like in a Gus Macker basketball tournament? You know what those are? Okay. Or like a 3-on-3, you know.
I know 3-on-3.
I mean, you know, there's other tournaments. Gus Macker was the famous one, largely in the Midwest.
Right.
Well, that was the opposite of that. Like, you'd lie about your height the other way.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you'd lie like 2-3 inches shorter so you could get into an easier division.
Yeah.
But other than that, typically it's pretty much lying to say you're taller, which you think of more as a basketball thing. But I guess if you're a goaltender, you know, you want, I mean, hey, if you're like 6'5", like Pekka-Rinne, I think he's legitimately 6'5". That's a good thing as a goaltender, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it is funny because last Saturday, for really, I think the first time I've heard an opposing player actually say this out loud, but Landeskog of the Colorado Avalanche last Saturday talked about Soros' height and was talking, and he scored a goal really, he was in tight, He went high and far side on Saros, and he's like, yeah, I mean, Saros, he's a really, really good goalie, but he's not the tallest guy. So when you get in tight, he can be susceptible to kind of bringing his shoulders down to try to collapse on the puck, and you can beat him up top. And that's something that I think a lot of teams around the league, they try to do to UC Saros. And when he's on, he moves so well, yeah, and he's so athletically gifted that he's able to overcome a lot of that. And I thought last night was a very good example of that. And to your point, Joe, he wasn't tested a whole lot last night, but sometimes that can be difficult games for goaltenders as well.
Oh, yeah. They always talk about
that. You settle into a rhythm of, all right, I'm feeling good, but you know, I haven't really been challenged all that much. But then, as we've seen, that can change very quickly throughout the course of a hockey game. You cannot be challenged for 55 minutes, and then the last 5 minutes, you can have the kitchen sink thrown at you, and you got to be ready for it. And I thought he was.
Yeah. I mean, Pecorine has talked about that a lot. I mean, this same group of players, we've seen games where, like, they dominated to the extent that he would go, I mean, gosh, like, full period almost without seeing a shot.
You going to let somebody come back down here and get me going a little bit?
Yeah, and then, you know, then when you do see one, you're not in that rhythm. So, you know, I feel like Saros, too, you tell me if I'm crazy here, I feel like he's probably learned a lot from Pecorine in terms of playing the puck behind the net, and I think he's a lot more confident, and he's very aggressive doing it like Peck. You know, of course, Peck has been great at that for a long time. He also, last night, had one moment where it got a little dicey on him, which tends to happen. But overall, I feel like he's better there. He's more, a little bit more aggressive, you know, going after the puck behind the net.
Oh, I would say so. I agree with that. Now, he's not as gifted as Rene is there. I'm not sure he probably will ever be.
And maybe the length is something there too at times.
Yeah, and like, how many times have we seen Rene, like, speaking of aggression, when they're trying to rim that puck around the boards behind the net and Rene just like literally throws his body into the boards to try to stop it.
Yeah.
Saros has started to do that at times as well, and I'm like, okay. Yeah. The student is watching the master.
Mini
Pekka out there. He's handling the puck. He had the puck behind the net last night while the net was empty, and I thought for about a half a second, I was like, he's about to shoot, and they're going to get two goalies to score an empty net goal, and this place is going to go bananas. But he made the right play and decided to clear it along. But I think for like a half a second, UC Saros, those eyes got big, and he was like, that goal is right there. We're up two.
He should have done it.
Let's just fire it. Yeah, just go for it. Why not?
I mean, you're not up. If you're up a one goal there, then don't do it.
Yeah,
but you're up 2-0.
And the Predators iced it like seven times in a row trying to score an empty net anyway.
Yeah, they really, I will say, you know, we haven't really ripped them for missing the open net.
I mean, adjust the sights a little bit. Come on.
But 3 minutes. I mean, they had 3 minutes of empty net time last night.
They did.
So,
and they had about seven looks at it.
Yeah.
A little bit wide.
Saros should have taken it.
Should have just gone for it. Can you imagine? You know how rare it is for a goalie to score anyway? That they would have to be, if he would have scored last night, the first goaltending duo on the same team to score in the same year. I mean,
there's no question. I mean, what's the total number?
Like six or something.
Five,
like that.
Six? Yeah. No, that would have been. So for all the ups and downs of this season, and, you know, discontent, hey.
Goalie,
that would have been something that you never
could
have taken away from this team.
That would have been what everybody remembers about this team, even if they go on to win the Stanley Cup. People are like, their goalie scored twice.
That's right. Both their goalies scored.
It was impressive to see the response last night because, look, I mean, let's be honest. We haven't known what we're going to get from this team really from game to game. I mean, the response in the Minnesota game to the Edmonton game that happened the night before wasn't good, in my opinion. And you thought, man, if there's ever going to be a time that they're going to come out, they're going to play really hard, they're going to be ready to go and executing at high level. To me, it would have been after that Edmonton game because they just got embarrassed the night before, and it didn't happen. So, I I'll be honest. I had legit concerns coming into the game last night that this may not go well because the matchup against the Stars has not been pretty for them. But to their credit, they played really well. We mentioned yesterday, you know, it's really hard to get to the middle of the ice and get some quality looks against the Stars. They got their fair share of looks last night. I know they only scored twice. They could have had three, four more goals last night.
Craig Smith had some real nice looks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like we said earlier, Johansson, I thought, you know, got himself into some positions, you know, to have a shot at it. Messing with the button again.
He's the buttons. He loves them. Yeah. The mics.
I just need to keep my hand off the button. Sorry, Marquise. He's
Joe. Keep your hand away from the button.
I don't know what it is. Like
Joe,
it's like a buzzer on Jeopardy.
Slowly move your hand.
Do you see it creeping back over there? He's like, I can't.
Remove the hand off the button.
See, the thing is, like, what if I need to, like, cough, it's not, do that. I can hit it. Like, that was on purpose. But, yeah, I'll just put my hand over here. Anyway.
No, he won't.
Now I forgot what I was saying.
Ricky,
I forgot what you're saying, too.
The Ricky Bobby of sports radio, Joe Rexroad, does not know what to do with his hand. You keep it off the button, Joe.
Taco Bell and KFC for lunch. I totally forgot what I was saying.
I did.
Sorry,
too,
I totally blew
that's
it, man.
Okay.
I had a good point, too. I was making a really good
point.
You
can make it when we come back. We're going to continue this conversation. Will Philip Forsberg's goal last night launch him forward as they move ahead here for the rest of the season offensively? We'll talk about that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Philip Forsberg found the witch doctor last night and got back on the board, baby. He's in there. 19th goal of the season, team leading. 19th goal of the season last night for Philip Forsberg. And you heard him talk about it there, Joe. I asked him after the game, like, it was frustration starting to creep in at this point for you? And he's like, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, it was. But to see one go in for him last night, I wonder what that does for him as they move forward. Because we've talked about how streaky he can be in terms of his goal-scoring numbers. Once one starts to go in, we've seen in the past, he can put together a run here and be really dangerous offensively down the stretch. And this team, man, could they use that right now from Philip Forsberg?
Well, Willie Donick expects 11 more goals.
I know.
That's all he's got. 11 more, and he's at 30. But no, he's very streaky. So that is the first thing I thought of last night, is that's the type of thing that could get him on a streak. And boy, do they need him to be on a streak. Also, he passed Martin Erat on the scoring list. And I'll be honest with you, Robbie, like, that's, obviously one of the best moves David Poyle's ever made in his career, right? It has to be.
Yes.
I knew Martin Erat was a good player. I didn't realize he scored that many goals here. I was like, really? I figured.
I mean, he did. He's here for a long time.
Yeah, sure, sure. But that's, of course, for anybody who doesn't know, that was the big trade, Martin Erat and someone else, to the Capitals,
Michael
for
Latta.
Forsberg. Yeah, Latta.
Yes.
For Forsberg back in, 2014, I think?
2013.
2013. Okay, see, I'm close.
The greatest trade that David Poyle has ever made.
It's got to be, right?
I mean, it was just so one-sided. You don't see a trade that bad that often in the league. Yeah, it was bad.
I mean, obviously the Capitals were buyers then.
They were buyers.
And they thought that
Erat requested a trade. Philip Forsberg was a first-round pick. I think he was like 11th overall or something like that. And the knock on him, and this is hilarious to go back and revisit this, I think the knock on Forsberg at the time was that he couldn't skate. And I'm like, I've watched him play ever since then. I'm like, yeah, I think he could skate okay.
Yeah. He was 18 years old at that point, right?
Yeah.
That was like, wow, really? He passed Martin Erat. But that's the thing, too. So that's for third.
Third all time, just behind David Legwan and Shea Weber. And he's not that far behind Shea Weber. I think he's like two or three behind Weber at this point. So to move into second.
Yeah. And certainly if you're the Preds, you sure hope he's in second place soon.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to get to 30, Willie, but I tell you what, he is streaky. He's as streaky as it comes, so that would be big. And it was interesting hearing John Hines talk about it. I think when things go poorly, John Hines, he's been very frank about things, just like he was, Monday night. But, he's just like most coaches. Like, he's not going to go out of his way to, like, criticize a player. But once, like, him talking about Forsberg last night kind of shed a little light on what he thinks about what he's been doing lately. And we've talked about this. Like, he's in position. He's been doing some of the good things. He said some similar things about Deschene, too, by the way. And I know it was right after a win, so you're feeling happy about everything. But it made me feel like those are not two of the guys that he's been as concerned about. Certainly, production is production. You got to have it.
Yeah.
When you get paid that much, there's no one would dispute that. But, again, when you're a coach, you're focused on process. And I came away thinking, those are two guys that he has felt okay about in terms of doing the right things to get to where they can produce.
And you mentioned John Hines talking about Matt Duchene, who also scored last night his 13th goal of the season. Here's what John Hines had to say about Matt Duchene after the game. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be really proud of Matt, to be honest with you. You know, he's struggled with trying to produce points, but I think when you look at the last few games, his work ethic's been very strong. His competitive level on the puck has been there. He's really working through things and was not trying to let his competitive level and his efforts slip just because of the points and then start to cheat the game to try to get points. So, he probably could have had 3 or 4 goals like he's had tonight over the past 10 or 15 games, but it's nice to see again for him to get in. He's at the net front. He gets a good tip, and hopefully that can help those guys at least relieve the pressure and now really get rolling here down the stretch.
That was John Hines talking about Matt Duchene and basically how he's been playing, even though the production hasn't been there for him as of late. We spent a lot of time, not only this week, but for the last month or so, really talking about the big four and the forwards for this Predators group. Two of them score last night. But like you said, I think John Hines has been feeling better about the way certainly Forsberg has played. But also Duchene as well. I've noticed that a little bit. I still think there's another level that Duchene can get to and that he needs to get to if this team is going to reach its full potential. But I did think last night he looked really, really good. I mean, he was as noticeable in a good way last night as Duchene, I think, has been in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a great sign. So that's two of the four that we talk about all the time. Again, I thought Johansson... I'd love to know the official film breakdown of him, yeah. But I thought we noticed him, right? I mean, you noticed him more. Yeah. Noticed him in some spots on the ice that you want to see him. Didn't finish, but he had some opportunities. And then Arvidsson, I do think that there's concern about that, whatever it is, hand, arm, wrist,
after the
Ryan Hartman slash, because – if you watch him last night, I don't know if you noticed, but he was shaking it a lot, yeah. And there's no way that's all right.
Yeah, no, I think there is reason to be concerned about that, and then that goes back to a question of, okay, has he fully recovered from all the Bortuzzo stuff? I mean, we've thought that he may be dealing with injuries all year long anyway because the speed hasn't been there. It's just a tough break for Arvidsson. If this hand thing, and look, obviously he's still able to play through it because he came back in that game and played last night. But it was a pretty wicked chop he took on his hand there. And if that's bothering you as a goal scorer, I mean, that can hang around for a while.
What do you remember what his ice time was? And we can look it up. But it wasn't – I mean, he didn't have a lot of it.
Right. I don't remember specifically what it
I'll
was.
Find
I, can,
it.
I can look that up. But I did think the team as a whole, they looked dangerous. And Matt Duchene talked about that a little bit after the game last night. Their poise, their puck movement, all these things that we've harped on all season long. They looked pretty good at it for a consistent period of time last night. Here's what Matt Duchene had to say about that.
Tonight was a lot better. Obviously, we had a lot more poise than the other night. I think we worked really hard the other night in mini, but you can't just work hard. So you got to make plays and have poise and confidence. And I think we learned from that. And tonight we had – it might have been the best poise and puck movement we've had all season. And it just looked more like what we should look like as a hockey team. We had way more good looks, and good rushes. We looked dangerous tonight, and we haven't looked that very much this season. So we just got to keep doing those things. And obviously, our PK was great, and our power play got the job done tonight.
I thought the Predators were continuously threatening in the game against Dallas. I know they only scored 2 goals, but I think they could have scored a lot more than that. I think they got to the hard areas, those areas in the middle of the ice. I know Nick Bonino had a chance from point-blank range, like
yep.
Shorthanded.
He's the guy who's been getting there.
Yeah, Craig Smith got to those areas. Johansson had a really good look from point-blank range that Hudobin, I thought, made a really impressive kick save on. They were getting to those areas. They were dangerous all night long. I mean, Forsberg's best chance of the night was one he didn't score on. I mean, he sent it wide. So I agree with Matt Duchene. That's kind of how you thought the Predators would look like heading into this season. If I've learned anything about this group so far this year, it's this. I'm not going to put a whole lot of stock into one game or really even 2 or 3 games. You need to show it to me for an extended stretch, and that's going to be the next challenge here. But certainly last night, I think, looked like the Predators that we thought we were going to see heading into this year.
And I was a little off. Arvidsson, he had 12 minutes on ice, so it was – more than I thought. I thought at one point in the game, I was like, wow, he really has not played a ton. So, but yeah, look.
He did spend a significant amount of time in the box last night.
That's true. He did he had two trips there. So that's part of it too. So maybe he's fine. I thought it looked like it was affecting him. And Arvidsson's just a guy who, like, opponents just want to beat the crap out of him. And he just annoys people, you know? And obviously he's not as big as some of these guys, so he takes a beating. But, yeah, they had good opportunities, as you said, against a team that has really been great about shutting them down, too. That's the thing. I mean, this match, and a Dallas team, we talked about it all day yesterday. I mean, you know, their identity is a much more defensive-minded, physical team. They're not the same kind of team that really they were last year. So they've been really good at taking away the Preds' top threats. And last night, poise, puck movement, whatever it was, they got themselves some nice looks. But then I still was, I think, as much impressed as anything with, like, in the defensive zone, not making the big mistake and just being solid all night. And I know Dallas has struggled. And that's all the talk with on that side is, you know, they're not working hard enough. Their compete level isn't good enough, all that stuff. Everybody has a different perspective of a game. But I think that was exactly the kind of game the Preds need to play over and over again, and they can win games like that.
When we come back, Nashville SC coach Gary Smith will join us here on the show. We'll look ahead to the big matchup this weekend in Portland. That's next. You're listening to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside the great and powerful Joe Rexroad. I called you that yesterday, Joe, and Charles Robinson, he didn't really know what was going on there.
What did he change it to? Hungover and confused?
Yeah, like the sleepy and hungover or something like that.
Yeah, now it's more like sluggish and chunky as I get older.
You still look great to me, too.
Yeah. In this 2009 Capital One Bowl sweatshirt.
It really gets you fired up. We are efforting to get Nashville SC coach Gary Smith on the line with us. Joe, you were there last Saturday night. What did you kind of make of the atmosphere and everything that went along with it at Nissan Stadium in a huge spectacle and I think really a celebration of soccer here in our city?
Well, it was a great atmosphere. There was nothing about it that surprised me other than, I guess, I mean, 59,000 is a big number. And just a few weeks ago, I think they were around 30,000. I thought, well, you know, maybe they can get to about 40. And 40 would be good. I mean, I don't think 40,000 would have been like a big disappointment or anything like that. But
that's how you operate the button.
Oh, right.
That's
a good use of the button. To not cut myself off saying a word. But when you get to 59, you set the record, Tennessee. That's saying something. And the back line, I thought, was – now, if you went to any of the Nashville SC USL games at First Tennessee Park – great atmosphere. It was a lot of fun. And the supporters groups, you know, were really good. I did a thing where I actually sat with them and actually went to the bar with them before the game, you know, for work purposes, of course. And
of course.
You know, but it was very cool. And they, you know, the chance, I mean, soccer's just different. And some of it has, you know, is in Bridgestone for the Preds too. It's always been sort of like, it's like hockey, but they've kind of taking a little bit from soccer, maybe college football. But, you know, actual soccer crowds are different than any other sport. And it's like their own game going on, too. Like, no matter what is happening, they are going to do what they do. They are not affected by what is happening on the field. Now, of course, the home team scores, you know, they'll lose it. But it's like they have their own job. And the back line, which is all these supporters groups led by the Roadies, but a bunch of other ones, that was a great scene back there. The Johnny Cash banner was cool. So I mean, like, the atmosphere was fantastic, and it's going to be interesting to see what it looks like week after week after week once Nashville SC is back home. Of course, next time out, they're on the road out in Portland, which is interesting too. I mean, when you talk about coronavirus, we have a case now in Williamson County, but that's obviously the Pacific Northwest is a place where there's a lot of that right now.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately something that the sports world as a whole is having to do with. I remember, you know, being around the Predators yesterday. I mean, they're very aware of all these things. I mean, they're not really high-fiving each other. They've been instructed to kind of keep the hand-to-hand contact to a minimum as best they can.
Other than against Corey Perry.
Other than against Corey Perry, which Jared Tenorti did go after him last night, kind of.
A little bit. Gave a little shove.
A lot of people, I think, were asking going into the game, like, are they going to take a shot at Corey Perry? And you're at this point in the standings, you don't really have the luxury of taking shots at people and going to the penalty box. Like, you got to win the game. Like, yep. That's what it's about this time of year. But it was funny to see the Nashville crowd every time Perry touched the puck. Just relentless. Relentless on him. They hate him.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. The suitor treatment.
Yeah, well, it was. Not really so much with Radulov last night.
They don't care about him anymore.
Okay, I guess not.
They gotta save Perry. It all for Corey Perry.
I guess so.
That's the only way Radulov was going to get off the hook, was like a guy like Corey Perry coming on his team.
Joe, I was watching, so obviously I couldn't go to the Nashville SC game last weekend because the Predators were playing at the same time, and I was at the hockey game. I was watching in the press box the game at the same time while the hockey game was being played. And when Walker Zimmerman scored that goal to even it up 1-1, it just looked like that place went bonkers. And I was impressed. Like, I'll be honest with you. Going into that game, I was like, this is going to be a really cool environment. It's going to be really cool for soccer in our city. I didn't expect Nashville SC to be all that competitive in that game because Atlanta United is really, really good. They've played well as of late. They had played before that game in terms of some pretty quality competition. And I thought Nashville SC, they held their own for the most part. That was, to me, really encouraging, I think, to see that last Saturday.
No, I agree. And I had no idea what to expect there. Just knowing that Atlanta United FC is supposed to be one of the best teams in the league.
Yep.
So it looked, the teams, you saw a difference, I thought, in the first 10 minutes or so of the game. And again, some of the Nashville SC guys afterward were talking about, you know, jitters and all that, which is normal. And I don't know if it was that or if it was just, you know, kind of adjusting to the opponent or whatever. But I'd say for the larger portion of that game, it looked like two very evenly matched teams. And really, Nashville SC had a couple just beautiful opportunities late to tie it, to get the equalizer.
The equalizer.
Just couldn't quite. You know, it's that precision. And it's one of those things that I think hockey and soccer share is, you know, you don't have a lot of scoring chances, like primo,
yeah,
top shelf scoring chances, and it is such precision required. Again, I go back to the Yossi pass to Craig Smith last night, which was ridiculous. But, you know, it's still a couple centimeters off, and you can't quite hook up. There are a couple plays like that late in the game for Nashville SC, and maybe as time goes on, and some of the guys are talking about this too, you know, you play more together, you build that chemistry, and you know, you find those centimeters and you score.
Yeah, and like you said, it's one of those things in soccer especially where when you get your opportunities, you got to do a good job of capitalizing. And to that point, I mean, Atlanta United, they had two shots on the goal, both went in. And that's, people hear that and they say, well, what's the goalie doing? Like that, it's a little bit different in soccer than it is in hockey. Number one, the goal is gigantic, obviously, and that goes without saying. But it's just a different sport. It's different the way things operate. Like, you know, if hockey, if you're out there and you face 10 shots and you give up 8 goals, like, it's a brutal, brutal night in the NHL. Never happens, really. Soccer, that's not really uncommon. Like, it's on your defenders to really keep them to the outside, stop them from getting inside the box, like, you know, corner kicks. You got to make sure you're doing a good job of winning those battles too. There's a lot that goes into it in soccer.
Yeah, I mean, hockey, you're going to have a lot of shots, quote unquote.
Yeah.
That's like the puck coming up on the net, and that doesn't. I mean, in soccer, if you get a shot on goal, usually it's somewhat dangerous.
Yeah,
I mean, not always, but. Yeah, that's a great example. Is that night two actual shots on goal, one of them was the second goal was a ridiculous play and shot, and it was also an unfortunate situation. I don't know if it mattered or not, but some of the Nashville SC guys stopped because the assistant referee, I hope I have that right, you know, called offsides briefly, raised her hand, put it back down. So there was a distraction there, but regardless, unbelievable goal. The first one was a mistake, and you could see it. You know, the Nashville SC defender peeling off the ball to try to take something away on the outside, and then it was just like you don't see too many wide open looks near the box like that, and that's going to be tough for a goaltender. And Joe Willis was really upset too because he was like, "You can't just leave the ball like that." So, you know, a little mistake here and there, but for the most part, the fact that they got two shots on goal tells you that the defensive structure worked really well for Nashville SC. And that's Gary Smith's, you know, reputation as a coach, is that he's hopefully we can ask him this. He's known as a coach who puts together good defensive structure.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like we're going to be able to connect with Gary Smith at the moment. We'll see if we can do that later on in the show. But, Joe, when you're talking about the crowd at Nissan Stadium, we've talked ad nauseum about how soccer has a very rowdy core of fans here in Nashville. What do we think people who maybe were attending a soccer game for the first time, experiencing MLS for the first time, your casual sports fan, what do we think they took away from Saturday night and that experience? And how much do you think the crowd, 59,000 people, the atmosphere, everything that went around it will help as Nashville SC tries to build their fan base now? Because remember, I don't think they're back home until March 21st. So we've got a little time here.
Yeah, I can't imagine it didn't help. I know some people who went sort of like, yeah, let's check it out. And we're like, oh, we're coming back.
Yeah.
So I have direct contact with people who said that, and I'm not surprised. And it's also, and this is where, like, for me, and I think I'm like a lot of people, the quality of the soccer, you know, if you're a discerning eye, I think a lot of people who love soccer, who watch Premier League all the time and, you know, the Champions League, you know, watch the European soccer, there's been a lot of, well, MLS, you know, it's not. For me, I was watching this stuff and I was impressed with the level of play. And obviously that's been a huge thing for MLS, is to try to rise up and become a more respectable league in the world scene. I can't compare it to MLS action of the past because I haven't watched much in person. But to me, if you watch that soccer, I can't imagine you would come away not impressed with the level of play. Now, some people, if you disagree with that, call in and tell me. If you're a soccer nut and you just didn't think it was, you know, quality enough play, I'm willing to listen to that. To me, I think that's an entertaining night of sports to watch that level of soccer. I thought there was a lot of really good talent on that field. And that's part of it, too. You still want to go watch a good product. At some point, the crowd,
that's the most important,
has its
part,
limitations in terms of attracting you to something. So you want to be able to watch great players, too. And, you know, Walker Zimmerman with the tango, that was a special play, too. And obviously, he's a huge acquisition and probably, you know, the first star for this franchise here in its first year.
When we come back, there are reports out of Boston swirling around that the Titans are using Tom Brady and this whole circus that has surrounded Tom Brady potentially entering free agency as leverage to, quote, lock in, unquote, Ryan Tannehill. We'll get into that next and what our reaction to that is. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, coming to you live on a beautiful Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, the Tom Brady stuff, it's out there again. NESN in Boston reporting yesterday that, quote, the Titans are reportedly using Tom Brady as leverage to lock in Ryan Tannehill. The article goes on to say the Titans are using Brady as leverage to re-sign Tannehill at a lower cost, Boston Sports Journal's Greg Bedard reported Thursday morning. Both Tannehill and Brady are scheduled to become free agents on March 18th. From Bedard's column, quote, the truth is there isn't much of a market, at least not with teams Brady really wants to or would play for. You, me, the Patriots, and the lamppost know Brady is not playing for the Raiders or the Bucks. Sorry, Marquise. He might, at the very end, play for the Chargers, but they might go another direction before that. The Giants and the Colts are out. League sources expect the Titans to lock in Ryan Tannehill at some point at a cheaper rate thanks to the Brady leverage, although that could change, end quote. So I did like the although that could change part to kind of leave some wiggle room here.
Something might happen, or the other thing might happen.
It may not happen. What do you make of the Titans potentially using all of this Brady stuff that we've spent so much time talking about, maybe not really having any interest in Brady at all, and trying to get Ryan Tannehill locked in a long-term contract for a cheaper rate?
Well, first of all, I have to think of our friend Bob Williams, who tweets us a lot, just tweet us about soccer. Bob, I hope you're excited. It's Tom Brady time, baby.
Yeah, buddy.
Well, listen, I've been saying this all along, Robbie. I'm not reporting it. I'm not saying I know. But in a tea leaves reading exercise here, I've thought all along that this Brady stuff is just a little leverage thing that can help you. Without, you don't want to go too far and, you know, tick off Tannehill or whatever, although I don't think that's that big of a concern. You know, I think he knows how the Titans feel about him. He's been in this organization for a year. Things went well, and you know, just because they might gush about Derrick Henry in Indy and not as much about him, is that going to make him, you know, make a decision that hurts his own career? I don't think so. So this has always been to me the most likely situation in that Brady is helping, and maybe it won't, but it's a potential help to the negotiations with Ryan Tannehill. Greg Bedard is a very good reporter. He started that website. He's been at Sports Illustrated. He's been at, I think, the Boston Globe before that. You know, he's certainly plugged in with the Patriots in that scene. You know, does he know that on the Titans side, that's what this is? I doubt it. But it's always been the most logical explanation to me. And maybe, I mean, last night sitting there talking with Teresa Walker on Press Row, and I'm like, what's right now? What's your percentage that Tom Brady is the Titans quarterback? She said 50-50. I'm like, holy cow. To me, that's super high. But I know some people who are, like, convinced now that that's what's going to happen.
Some people think it's higher than that.
Yeah.
They're like 70-30 on this thing.
I'm sticking with Ryan Tannehill is going to be the quarterback of Tennessee Titans next year. I have not moved off that. I have some of this stuff. Certainly makes you think, and I don't have much doubt that this place would interest Brady, but I think the idea of Brady as a leverage assistance and not as the focal point of pursuit has always made the most sense.
I hear that, but like at the end of the day, how much leverage are you really going to have if you're the Titans? Because in order to have that leverage, Brady has to actually be interested in coming here and actually want to leave the New England Patriots. So if it comes out, you know, in a week or less than a week that Brady's going to re-sign in New England and you spend all this time trying to get quote-unquote leverage out of this situation.
But what have they done?
All of it goes down the drain,
though. What have the Titans done to try to – they haven't done anything. This is just us out here talking about it.
But they haven't shut anything down either.
But no, why would you? That's the thing. That's the beauty of this. If they're the Titans, if you're the Titans, they probably sit here laughing at all this discussion.
But if you're Ryan Tannehill, at some point, like if I'm Ryan Tannehill and I hear them talk about Derrick Henry the way they talked about Derrick Henry, and they're not saying the same things about me after what I know I just did for this franchise, it's not a coincidence that everything turned around when Ryan Tannehill came back in. I'd be like, you know what? You know, hey, I'm here. You could say something.
Yeah. I mean, if that's Ryan Tannehill's concern, then he should leave the NFL. I mean, he's smart enough to understand, you know, they have to have Derrick Henry back, in my opinion, and I think in their opinion. So if you're asked about Derrick Henry, go, you know.
But then Ryan, would Ryan Tannehill not look at that and be like, well, don't you have to have me back too?
Because, well, I don't know. Tom Brady's pretty good.
Is he still, though?
Well,
I mean that's kind of the question.
Sure. I mean, I think they should take Tannehill. I'm just saying I understood all the different ways they responded to things, and I don't know how much leverage it actually turns out to be, but I don't think it's a bad thing if you're the Titans, you're trying to negotiate a deal that's as team-friendly as possible. You're trying to save as much money as possible. I don't think it's a terrible thing for the guy you're negotiating with to think it's possible that one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time also might want that job.
Look, I'm with you. I'm just trying to approach this from Ryan Tannehill's point of view. And, you know, all of these guys, whether they seem like it or not, they have some level of ego. And that factors in. I mean, you don't really get to this point as a professional. You need a certain level of ego to have kind of the, you know, that drive to get to this point. And I think, Ryan, especially at the quarterback position, you kind of have to have that, I think, to be to a degree. Now, you don't need to really be like, you know, Baker Mayfield level of ego, I don't think, to be successful. But you've got to have it to a degree. And I do wonder, like, you know, obviously publicly Tannehill's not going to say anything. But here's all this smoke and all this noise about Brady, about all these rumors swirling around Vrabel and him being best buds. And you're probably right. At the end of the day, he probably doesn't care about that. But I do wonder if a small part of him's like, hey, can y'all guys like publicly say something like to stop all these things? Like, why would you not do that?
Because you're negotiating. I mean, so I agree. You have to have a certain level of ego, but you also have to have intelligence. And if you're Ryan Tannehill, you got to look at this situation and feel like this is where you should be. I mean, you got to look at this situation and not believe. Yeah, you can believe in yourself, but you can't just assume that anywhere out there you're going to have the same success. You know, the specific people working together, specific system, offensive coordinator, all that stuff. Like, I mean, that's why. And Tannehill did say, I think on Sirius this week, you know, this is where he wants to be. No surprise. I mean, I think it's worked out pretty well publicly for the Titans. And maybe we're wrong and all this stuff is wrong and it's just Brady that they've wanted. But I don't buy that. I don't think that's the smart play, and I think they know that. And ultimately, we'll see. Maybe the tag has to be used. You know, that's the thing. I mean, you know, you talk about not ticking someone off. I mean, that's where, you know, the tag is, you know, that's where you can really tick someone off.
Absolutely.
You know, if you try to tag Derrick Henry, which I don't think that's going to come into play, you're talking about him for 1 year, you know, making 12 ish or close to 13 right in there. That would be, I think, infuriating for him. And with Tannehill, I think it makes more sense to tag him. You know, it's he had 13 good games. He had this other career before that was not as good. And it would still be a very good payday for him in that 1 year. But that's still, I'm sure he wouldn't be happy about that either. No. I mean, all these guys want long-term deals. This game's way too easy to end immediately on you.
Teresa Walker tweets in and says, yes, R. Stanley NHL, it's hashtag negotiating season. I love negotiating season. It's my favorite part. We're almost getting close to the real deal, though, Joe. Here in a couple weeks, we're going to have some smoke to this fire, one way or the other. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I am too. I'm excited for this to be freaking resolved. That's what I'm excited about. Let's move on. And hey, if it's Brady, oh, the fun we'll have.
Oh, yes,
right,
we
Marquise?
Will.
Look at that smile, Marquise. He's been waiting for it the
whole time. Well, I mean, if you want me to put, you know, personal differences aside, I would prefer him to go to Las Vegas, but...
Oh, you want him with your Raiders?
Yeah, but here's the thing. They're not that good.
No, they're not.
You were about to say they suck, weren't you?
Yeah, they do suck.
Yeah, they're not that bad.
Joe, they're pretty bad. Joe, come on. They're pretty bad.
They got a lot of draft picks. You gotta be excited about
anybody who would get beat by the Jets as bad as they did during the season, yeah, they're pretty bad. That's why I was like, good thing they didn't go to the playoffs. I didn't want to watch them in the playoffs.
That's the thing. I mean, they still were right there to get in the playoffs.
Yeah,
amazing, really.
Now, mind you, and a lot of people say, like, well, Derek Carr is coming off one of his best seasons in a while. But I'm like, how long are you going to ride that horse? I mean,
you're down on no. D. Carr.
Yeah. Just disrespectful.
You want him out of there?
I just can't wait till it's Jameis Winston, Derek Carr, the quarterback battle of the year. I love it.
That would be fun.
That would
interceptions
be awesome.
Galore, incomplete passes. It's going to be amazing.
It really is. When we come back, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport will join us. We'll get into the latest on the Brady discussion with him as well. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game. First, Nashville is a proud and supportive city with a great willingness to help out when needed. Obviously, this week has been a trying time for our community. If you're looking for ways that you can volunteer or donate, visit the Nashville or thegamenashville.com/Nashville Strong to find a list of how you can help those that have been affected by these horrific storms. We'll be right back with Teron Davenport here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.